Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
Swing and miss, strike three, went to the curveball consistently there and strikes out Crooks for the first out of the ballgame. Field in with Church at third base and Fermin, an RBI double running at second. Swing and miss for strike three, flipped in another curveball. Both outs in the inning, strikeouts. Swing and miss. They'll throw to first to confirm the out, but that is strike three. Redbirds strike out three times, but tie the ballgame.
Memphis Redbirds TV on the call. Chase McDermott getting some strikeouts. We've talked a lot about how Chase McDermott would make sense to be at least a long man in this bullpen because they don't have a long man.
Yeah.
Alas, he's still in the minors, and they obviously think more of Brandon Young than him because Brandon Young's on the taxi squad right now. Looks like he's going to make a start tomorrow. Where are we? How's Chase McDermott doing at Norfolk?
I mean, he's doing... You know, Brandon Young, I guess, is a little older than him, a little bit more seasoned, I guess. But, yeah, that's a pretty good outing against Memphis there. I mean, look, 93 pitches, 55 strikes, that's going to be the problem, right? I mean, that's command. And go back to start before that, 94 pitches, 51 strikes, 89 pitches, 47 strikes. 63 pitches, 26 strikes. 85 pitches, 46 strikes. I know where the trepidation lies with them, and that is the case with young pitchers, right? It was the same thing with Povich from the left side. This guy throws harder. I think this guy has more of a premium bullpen pitch mix. But, like, so why not start that process? If you don't think he has the repertoire or you're doubtful that he has it, is another 6 weeks down there going to be that big of a difference? Or do you and he and everybody need to start figuring it out at the major league level? Because I know the fastball slider sweeper thing can be effective for him. It is effective for him. Yeah, you'd say, well, when you're a reliever, command matters even more. Well, and I would say, yeah, but the kid to this point's had to be thinking of himself as a marathoner, not a sprinter. So, if you've built him up to the point where you're letting him throw over 90 pitches regularly down there, and while, again, four walks, three walks, four walks, six walks, five walks, that's not great. And the strikeouts have ticked down. I also go back to, yeah, but he was dominating AAA a year ago, and you didn't give him a regular look-see. Right? You pick these weird spots to throw him up here, kind of get his feet wet, but not get his feet wet in a normal way. So... to Gigi's point, I think having him up here and pitching him 2 to 3 times a week out of the pen and starting him in that
starting him
where Morton was and then seeing if you can build from there. Now you would say, well, there's a lot of guys in the pen who are getting the job done right now. And I would say, yeah, but is a Bluette waiver claim more important than Chase McDermott? Because that's the role I could foresee him in. So, I mean, like, is like Bluette's a big part of the future?
No. They already got rid of him once.
You just waived him a couple weeks ago. But that's the part of it where you tell me he's changed his spots and you tell me it's different now and, oh, the things he said. I'm looking at the things he does. And I don't think Chase McDermott's going to find out a whole lot about himself walking guys down there in that role. And if you don't trust him as a starter, and it's clear they don't because he hasn't gotten many starts up here, and now, you know, Rodgers is ahead of him and Brandon Young's ahead of him, then let's start bleeding him in a different role up here because I don't think he's going to be a starter for them anyway.
Well, someone we think is going to be a big part of the Orioles' future is your guy, Big Sam Basayo, and he continues to be red hot in June.
I mean, he's the best hitter in AAA, and he's the youngest hitter in AAA. Like, I don't know any other way to quantify it more than that, and that's what Fangraphs thinks, and that's what Baseball Prospectus thinks, and... that's the reality, and at age 20, in something of a lost season, he doesn't need to be here right now. And I'm with that. But I do think we need to chronicle here pretty regularly what's going on, because Fangraphs thinks he's the best hitter in the minors right now, and he's a 20-year-old in a league full of guys who, by and large, are 26 and older. And he missed time. And, you know, he missed a little bit of time last year, too, and he didn't have a normal spring training. So for him to be doing this, I find to be incredibly significant. And, again, we talked earlier in the show about Jackson Holliday and the gains he's made and how, for me, that's number one, number two, and number three, and the most significant positive things that have happened from opening day to now for them organization-wide. This is up there as well. And the catching discussion's a different discussion. But, like, do I think he could play first base 4 or 5 days a week in the majors right now? And so, how do you get the bat? And, oh, he's only, you're not going to catch him that much. And you, and I get it. If they really think he's a long-term catcher, then, yeah, he needs to catch four days a week in Norfolk. But I also think don't let that belie the fact that if he was given the shot that they're giving to Mayo right now, I think he could handle himself at first base. And I think the bat, while there'd be some up and downs like there were for Mayo last year when he finally got up here, I think the bat would play up here. I don't need to see him hit AAA pitching any more than he has. The next challenge for him as a hitter is going to be whenever he gets to the major leagues. And I'm just telling you, I think he's plenty fine at first base.
So if you're, granted, if you were in charge of his development right now, what's he doing? Because obviously the bat plays, but is it about catching more? Is it about playing more first base?
I mean, you don't want to give up on a catcher. And I think
because he's had limited opportunities to catch this year because of injuries.
And he's young, and catchers you want to take time with. But this is also a different situation because Adley's – when is Adley a free agent?
He's got 2 more years.
Yeah, this was first year of arbitration, yeah.
So, I mean, again, this is a weird moment. If you're asking me, I'd have fired the GM before the season started. So, like, I'd have a different group in here, and they'd be evaluating it differently. And maybe they look at Adley in a way that the guy who took him 1-1 never could. Because guess what? They're not the ones who took him 1-1. They can be much more cynical and calculated about it than Elias ever will be because he chose this guy over Bobby Witt. So, I don't know how to answer that. Like, I don't think there's going to be another contract for Adley here, but, like, maybe they want to buy low on Adley. That clouds things. If there was not that hanging over it, and this was an organization that I respected from a baseball operation standpoint, then maybe they would be trying to get Adley healthy and trade him out of here, and Basayo catches, we find out how much Basayo can catch up here. And if it's not as much as we like, no big deal. We got first base. I'd like to see him scrap first base. I'd like to see him in right field 2 days a week. That's what I would like to see. Let's start building that up in case the catcher thing doesn't happen here because they're going to cling to Adley until they're here as a baseball operations staff because they took Adley 1-1.
Orioles and the Rangers, game 2 of the 3-game series tonight at 6:30. Baltimore Baseball Night starts at 5:30. Bob Haney, Jim Hunter live from Pickles. Coming up next, it's T-Bone time. TMI with TIM. What you got?
Yeah, I want to get back into Jackson Holliday. And it wasn't that long ago that they weren't playing him against left-handed pitching. Well, his numbers against left-handed pitching will surprise you. We'll also hear from Tony Mancelino, who had some very interesting comments about the former 1-1 after last night's win over the Rangers. That's next on the
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
A fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with Tam. Before we get to that, fifth caller right now, 410-583-1057. 2 tickets to see Seether and Daughtry. That's October 12th at Pier 6 Pavilion. 410-583-1057. Tickets to see Seether and Daughtry. Now the floor is yours, Bum.
Well, early on in the season, we would get frustrated when Jackson Holliday would be out against a starting left-handed pitcher. It's something that we've been seeing with Kobe Mayo from the right-handed side, where going against the lefty last night and Patrick Corbin, you're in. We'll see if he's going to be in tonight. But Jackson Holliday, don't look now, but he has, in a much smaller sample size, I will grant you, better numbers against lefties than righties. 66 at-bats against left-handed pitching. He has better batting average on base and slugging than against right-handed pitching. And a lot of it has been the recent production, where he wasn't in the lineup Friday when the Orioles were facing Max Fried, and then that's when Adley got scratched and Jackson ended up DHing. Got a hit right in his first at-bat of the game, and two hits last night, and driving in, hit the homer off Corbin, of course, driving in four runs in total yesterday. But Jackson has really taken the next step this year, and numbers up across the board, and something you've been seeing a lot recently, him really just going up there and hacking on first pitch, and those numbers have been great. 358 batting average on balls in play on first pitch, OPS of 967. He's been in the leadoff spot a lot lately, and Tony Mancelino, he was asked about Jackson Holliday's possibility of making the All-Star team.
And this is just the tip of the iceberg. The All-Star thing's important to the players. It's important to the fans. It's important to us. You know, when I look at Jackson, I'm not concerned about the All-Star thing right now. It's like, how do we get this kid to be one of the top five players in the game by 2027? You know, that's how I look at Jackson. It's, you know, continuing more left on left. It's doing what he's doing offensively. It's improving defensively. It's stealing bases, you know. Like, so the All-Star thing's a thing, and everybody wants that. But, you know, when I look at Jackson, I look at him probably in a little different light. You know, bigger goals than the All-Star team for me.
Tony Mancelino not tempering expectations at all there, hoping that he's a top five player in 2027. But, look, he's far from a finished product. He's still just 21 years old. Would you like to see him walk more? Absolutely. Would you like to see him better on the base pass, be able to steal bases?
Yeah.
Being in the 86th percentile in sprint speed, of course. Can he improve defensively at second base? Absolutely. But right now, you like the trajectory he's on. And if you go back to April 23rd, that was when he had the conversation with his dad and changing the stance and how he's holding the bat. The numbers are really strong in terms of second baseman in the majors. Ninth in OPS, seventh in RBIs, fifth in doubles, sixth in home runs. And heck, when you compare his numbers to Gunnar Henderson, and this yes. isn't to put down Gunnar Henderson at all, I don't think anyone had on their bingo card on June 24th, Jackson Holliday would have more home runs than Gunnar Henderson, 9-8. And if you want to do extra base hits, he has only one less extra base hit than Gunnar Henderson, which is crazy to think about.
He's developing right before our eyes. He's getting more confident. He's getting more ambitious. He's getting more comfortable in his own skin. I just don't know why we need to, like, we all see it. I know that this guy's a cheerleader and he gets really worked up, but like the whole, you know, our leadoff guy forevermore. It's a long season. There's ebbs and flows. He's the youngest player in the major leagues. Like, why put that on him? So then if you do have to bump him down, does this then affect your willingness to do that down the road? And then does it also get in his head? Like, can't we just let it breathe? Can't we just let it be? Can't we just compliment him, but also acknowledge that, like, as bad as we think this lineup's been, might be even worse come August the 2nd. You know what I mean? Like, it just, people are going to pitch him differently. Like, I don't know, man. I heard that, and I was like, can we just pump the brakes on that?
Well, we had those conversations last Friday heading into it where, hey, should you drop Jackson down? And it's not to put him down at all. It's the ebbs and flows of the season and him being the youngest position player in baseball.
I think that was Tony Manzolino's odd way of saying he's our leadoff guy. Like, yeah. Now, and he went, I probably went over, but that's what he does. But it's his way of saying, like, this guy's going to be our leadoff guy. And we realize there's going to be ebbs and flows to a season, but you know what? He's staying in that spot. Could he have said it better? Maybe, but we've said that a few times with Tony Manzalina.
Yeah, that's definitely.
I don't know why we've got to sort of go.
I didn't react that way to it. He's one of the few good things that's going on with this team this season. And I think he took the pom-poms out big time to talk about it.
Yeah. And they should. Look, it's a big success for them organizationally wide. And they needed him to make major strides, and he did. I think there's a way to pat him on the back and make sure he's getting the attaboys and accolades he needs, but not make sweeping projections about, you know what I mean, the future. I'd also say 2027. 2027, he's Scott Boras's player. He's not yours.
Yeah. Well, 2027, so what's this?
They were always playing for 2027, though, Jason.
That's what it's been.
That's a good point.
Since 2019, they've been playing for 2027.
Coming up next, Orioles, they beat the Rangers last night, but on Sunday, they lost to the Yankees in the Bronx. Buck Showalter was part of the Roku call. He joins us next here on the...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Fan. Orioles beat the Rangers last night 6-0. Game two of the three-game set tonight at 6:30. Baltimore Baseball Night at 5:30. Bob Haney and Jim Hunter. And let's talk some Orioles now as we head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Former Oriole manager, part of the Roku call from the Bronx on Sunday as the Orioles lost to the Yankees, losing that series. It's Buck Showalter joining us now. And Buck, thank you as always for your time. We always get appreciate the chance to talk to you. So you got a up-close and personal look at the Orioles on Sunday over the weekend. What were your takeaways of this club?
Well, let me tell you guys something. Note to yourself, make sure you're not doing a game in New York City on the day after our country bombs Iran. Let me tell you what, travel, trying to get to the airport, getting through security, oh my goodness.
Oof.
So those 11:35 games, you better make sure the coffee's on. But you know what? It was. I thought the Orioles presented themselves well for the most part. They pitched well. You know, Kramer's the last guy left from all those deals in 2018. I was thinking about that as I watched him and what was being said about him back then. But you know, I was looking at a lot of their transactional stuff and when they're projecting, they're only 6.5 out of the wild card and. They're going to get a lot of people back in July and August. They're positioned. If they can stay in the hunt here and not, you know, and pick up a few games, they could have some fun in August and September. I still feel that way. They're a talented club, talent place.
Buck, how cool has it been to see the light bulb really turn on for Jackson Holliday this season?
Yeah, it's always fun with a young player. You know, we make the mistake of thinking, okay, they hit 15 home runs the first year. They're going to hit 20 the next year. And another year later, they're going to hit 25. You know, the thing I like is that he's always stayed attentive to his defense. And he's starting to, you know, as far as the little things that show up, the 90-foot increments that win or lose ball games. You know, everybody talks about the home runs and the 360-foot swings where you run around the bases four times 90. But he seems to be sweating the details, and that's always good to see with a young player.
How odd is it to you to be talking to the interactions with Gunner, it seemed like you guys, like, it's one thing if it's a right fielder, you know what I mean, I guess, but when it's the shortstop, and you even joked about it, you know, somebody like Stanton coming up, is that still seem weird to you? Because as a viewer, it still kind of feels weird to me.
I don't like it.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, I would find somebody else to stick that on, maybe the DH.
Yeah,
I don't know. I you notice I didn't ask anything.
Yeah.
I would not. But, you know, I know what they pay those guys for that, and God bless them. I would never stand in their way, and I don't want to be the old guy on the porch screaming at the kids, but that just makes me uncomfortable. If something happens there, and it's because, you know, we might have gotten their way. You notice that we were picky about who we kind of let on that thing, but, you know, we did. They weren't getting the money back then, and when they said, hey, Buck, I could pay for my kids' tuition if you let me do this, you usually let them do it.
We're talking with Buck Showalter. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Buck, obviously many years managing the situation. I'm curious to get your thoughts on Trevor Rogers, who the Orioles acquired in a deal last year, was frankly not good, got hurt in spring training, so he never had an opportunity to compete for the rotation. He's been up, was not great in Norfolk, but he's been up for three starts. Two have been excellent, and one was really bad. What are you seeing from him?
Well, I think, you know, you got to let that play out. You know, obviously, he's got a track record of success. That's why he was acquired. And, you know, getting the physical part of it behind you is always, you're going through periods where you go, okay, is that going to hurt if I push myself here? Is this going to be an issue? And I don't care how much you do on rehab, whether you're a position player or a pitcher, there's just a different level that you go to in a game. You go to a little different part of your tank. And I think he's kind of working his way through that. You know, I think he's got a lot of want to. I think he misses the action, so to speak. And I think you'll see more of the good outings than the other ones. And I think every once in a while, some guys, it's good for them to struggle a little bit because it makes you realize what a fine line there is between success and failure in the big leagues. First of all, it's hard to do. What we ask these guys to do, especially the starting pitcher, it's hard. These are the best players in the world, and you try to have some sympathy, but not empathy. You know, it's, you're trying to eliminate sympathetic ears to BS, but you do realize that this is hard to do, and it's not just anybody can do it. I think he's going to be okay.
Buck, you mentioned earlier the O's, they're 6.5 games out of the wild card spot. A lot of teams are ahead of them, and obviously having that third wild card really changes the dynamic when it comes to the trade deadline. And we're a little more than a month away, but how do you see Mike Elias navigating this? Is this maybe a buy and sell deadline, stand pat? What do you think?
First of all, I'm not going to sit here and act like I know what he's thinking, what he should and shouldn't do. I'm not close enough to it. But I do know that it's a tough spot because you want to be competitive. You want to do what's best. You'd like to do a little bit of both, quite frankly. But at what price? At what price? You know, the biggest thing you can do is evaluate your own people, you know, and know, you know, we call them fake prospects years ago. That, you know, you try to identify the real guys and the ones that may have some issues going forward, and you try to move them at their apex. And it's an art. It's not a science. There's an art to knowing, and a lot of that comes from conversation with people that are around them every day as far as makeup and other things go on, the defensive side of the ball, the base running side of the ball. And, you know, that's something that I've noticed has been such a challenge, it seems like, with these guys coming through the minor league so fast. It's the base running mistakes that you see every night because, the game's played in 90-foot increments. And there's a lot of give and take of 90 feet that shouldn't be there.
Yankees, you know, survived the Orioles that weekend, but they don't look like savages in the box right now. They're leaving a lot of guys on base. We know it's a cyclical sport, and Judge wasn't going to bat 400 all year. But what do you think of the state of the Yankees right now?
Well, I like their versatility and I like their depth. Mm-hmm. I think that plays, and every club is going to go through a period where it's tough. But they've got a lot of interchangeable parts, and that's really become a big thing in the big leagues today. Guys that can play multiple positions, you know, 8 or 9 deep with their starters. And you know, I was thinking the other day that the Dodgers had 13 or 14 pitchers on the IL. Yeah. If we had 13 or 14 guys when I was in Baltimore on the IL, we couldn't have played a game with that. You know, and that tells you some of the depth, and that's where a lot of these big market teams just beat up on some of the small market teams and the depth that they're able to have. And they've got a good farm system. But I look at, you know, Grayson and some of the guys that they potentially can get back. I wouldn't count them out. And as a manager, you hope you make it tough on the GM and you play well enough where it makes you think that, hey, we're getting ready to get these guys back. Is there anybody that we could trade for that would be better than a healthy Grayson Rodriguez?
talking to Buck Showalter's Inside Access here on the Fan. Buck, is it just me, or it seems like many more guys? You mentioned all the injuries. So I look at Arizona; they got a ton of guys hurt, and they're yep. completely decimated. Are more guys getting hurt now, or do you have any theories as to why there's so many injuries now?
We all do, and everybody's you know screaming at the TV and all this and that. They're doing this now, and they're chasing velocity and. Yeah, I think that the human body was made to withstand just so much, and I know even with the pitch clock now that they're going, you know, full energy output on every pitch quicker. You see it just go watch the travel squads with these young kids and everything in the arms. I know my grandsons are playing now, and I can't believe how much they're letting some of these kids pitch. But I do think some of the strain that we used to take off the shoulders and elbows by the legs. There's a lot more upright pitching, a lot of posting up and working over the leg. I want you to watch the games tonight. Tell me how many pitchers throw the baseball and end up in a straight on fielding position after they release the baseball. That's really different. You were taught where you should be in a fielding position because it perpetuated a good delivery. I look at a lot of these deliveries and they're not very good, but they throw hard and they pay the price for it.
Buck, you mentioned the depth of the big market teams earlier. How the heck do the Rays do it year in and year out? Just being two games behind the Yankees, they have no payroll every single year, but they're always in the mix. We call them cockroaches. You can't kill them.
But you know, it they know who they are. You know, something that we just beat up on in Baltimore and I was there is who are we? You know, don't confuse the fans. Don't start talking about signing Soto. Don't start doing this, whatever. You know, Mr. Angelo showed me his books. He goes, every penny I get over the break-even mark, I'm putting back in the club. Here, look, this is what we're dealing with. And he did. But you have to be better at six-year free agents. You have to be better at acquisitions. You have to have a coaching staff that can take a potential problem player and accentuate them. You know, they play defense. They play a lot of smaller ball. They put the ball in play more. And their pitchers, keep up with how many guys they go through over in a three-year period. They run them in and out of there. I don't want to say use them up. let it hunt as much as it can hunt and then go get another one. But they know who they are. There's no doubt about certain players I'll see show up and I go, that's a guy that would fit in Tampa. Jake Mangum, the kid down there from Mississippi State, that's my alma mater, he was with us with the Mets. I thought he was going to be a great fourth outfielder. Some people didn't agree with me, and he's playing it every day over there, hitting 300. I said to him in Austin, you'd be a perfect player for Tampa Bay. They will get what you bring.
Wow. Buck Showalter, always great talking to you. Thank you so much. And remember, pay attention to world events when traveling.
Man, oh, man. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. When I landed in Texas, I almost dropped to my knees. See you guys.
Thank you.
Buck. Buck Showalter. Hey, coming up next, purple rain in the forecast. And we had a feeling, Jason was on this from the jump, collusion involving Lamar Jackson when he was trying to get out of Baltimore. Remember, he publicly requested a trade. Now there's proof. We'll discuss next here on The Fan. Remember talking about this Lamar Jackson contract situation in real time a couple years back when Lamar publicly demanded a trade and no team seemed to be interested? Arthur Blank famously is like, we're good with Desmond Ridder. We don't need that. And Jason, you had mentioned it.
They were signing box safeties and guards.
Yeah.
Remember? Oh, he just signed a guard to a record contract.
It was odd. And you said in real time it didn't pass your smell test. Well, now there's seemingly proof as it's been uncovered by Pablo Torrey, and here he is talking about it.
And I want to start with Lamar Jackson here, not just because he's the biggest name, the two-time MVP, but because we have this private text message, and now we're in the private text message zone when it comes to these stars. Because according to the document, Lamar Jackson had sent a text to Ravens general manager Eric DaCosta. Quote, I'm going to continue to request a, and this is in all caps, fully guaranteed contract. I understand you all don't, and that's fine. End quote. This eventually led Lamar Jackson to refusing different contract offers from the Ravens and then requesting a trade, as NFL fans might recall, and then claiming, and this is one of my favorite details in this whole thing, amid these stalled negotiations, that, quote, the microphone on his phone was not working, making communications with Mr. DaCosta difficult. end quote.
It was also great to see that in those communications, Eric did ask him, what teams would you like to be traded to? And Lamar never responded.
Well, and so just to give full clarity here. So obviously we lived through the post Deshaun Watson situation where that we thought might become the new norm. Players were obviously going to ask for fully guaranteed deals and teams were going to dig their heels in. We had Steve Bisciotti come out at that same owner's meeting where we now know that the management council urged teams not to give out these kind of contracts. You know, Bisciotti was talking about how Lamar wasn't worthy of it and how it's an outlier and you know, everybody was crapping on the Browns. And so at a certain point, the NFL alleged collusion. And then there was a process where they and the league special master, they gathered information. There's obviously a discovery process. That's where you get these emails and copies of text coming out. And then there was a decision that was rendered that was kept under wraps.
Yeah.
That both the NFL and the NFLPA wanted under wraps, even though it revealed that, yeah, a lot of what the NFLPA was alleging actually happened. But of course, because like this is a kangaroo court, it's not really like a full-blown court of law. The appeals decision also said, well, just because the management council, you know, urged these teams to do it doesn't mean that they acted exactly on that. Yet a player who might go down as a top five, top 10 player in the history of this league, not only could he not get a contract offer in real time, even though he was essentially an unrestricted free agent, he couldn't get a phone call.
No.
This process of discovery, did it find one owner who reached out to Lamar and said, what's your number? Did we find one owner or team president who reached out to Lamar and said, hey, I want to meet with you? Right? Like that, none of that happened in real time. And I'm sitting here saying the Ravens got lucky because the rest of the league isn't trying to win. They're trying to depress salaries. They're putting their financial goals above their football goals. And it's staggering to me that the NFLPA wouldn't be doing a tap dance about this, saying they stifled it because J.C. Treader looks like he's incompetent, because he was J.C. Treader, former center with the Browns, who was a big wig with the union, because you've got players slandering players in internal documents and they don't think that looks good for them. And frankly, the person running the NFLPA right now has never run anything close to this before. From everything I hear from people in that building, it doesn't quite even understand the job yet. And this wasn't his fight. This was Demoris Smith's fight. So he feels like, I'm guessing maybe, well, why should we make a big deal about this? Because it was before my time anyway. But you would think the NFLPA would at least have sent this document that it took Pablo Torre and Florio months to find. You would have think they would have emailed it to everybody who covers the NFL and said, hey, full disclosure, here's what the owners were up to in their private meetings.
I think, and I understand you don't want the player crapping on another player, but the overall thing is so much bigger than that, where I think the juice is absolutely worth the squeeze in this situation.
By the way, the other thing, you talk about crapping on other players, J.C. Treader called Russell Wilson a wuss. Like, that some of the other stuff that's come out.
That's what I'm saying. And so they're more concerned about sort of those optics or those sideshows. But like the bigger picture was, yeah, they didn't win this thing. They weren't going to win this thing. It was a stacked court.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of information revealed, internal documents, right? You got owners saying, you know, you got owners congratulating other owners for Kyler Murray not getting more money and more guaranteed money, right? You got Spanos, legendary cheapo with the Chargers, and Bidwell, legendary cheapo with the Cardinals, high-fiving each other about this stuff. Like,
by the way, second-generation cheapos in both cases.
Born into it. Yeah. Nepo babies. Yeah. And the NFLPA is so crooked in their own way and so backwards, and they've been gutted by a lot of really smart people taking buyouts saying, I don't trust this new guy. I definitely don't trust this new guy to go up to war against these billionaires in a war he doesn't even really, I think, want to fight or understand how to fight. Their words, not mine, is what people have been telling me there for months. This is just another sort of indictment of the union.
I hate to go in a completely different direction, but how the heck did that guy get that gig when they're this close to negotiating a new CBA?
Well, like, D wasn't going to do it anymore, and they're the internal candidates.
You like D?
Look, I liked him, I think, more like. I mean, I respected him more than I think some other people did. I felt like he was always going to have a difficult hand to fight, and I think he did at least have a fighting spirit. I think history, if this next CBA goes as far to the owner's side as I think it will, I think history might look back on D. Smith you know, as someone who it could have been worse. I'll put it that way. And having to replace who we had to replace, legendary player, Hall of Famer, luminary, like that was a tough spot. You'd think the guy who had to replace D. Smith would be in position to maybe succeed, but I don't think that's going to be the case.
Orioles getting ready to play the Rangers game 2 of 3 game series. Tony Manzalino, interim manager, just spoke with the media. Cordell Woodland was there. He joins us next here on The Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.